Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Yak Gadget. For all your kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Pelican cases, coolers, and lighting, go to pelican.com. The 153 Bait Company. For all your hard and soft bait needs, go to the 153anglers.com. Now let's get this show started.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dustin. Tonight we're going to get down and dirty with two anglers from Virginia Commonwealth over there on the eastern seaboard. We're going to talk a little bit about some of my favorite fish to target, talk about speckled trout. You know, this year in Texas, we had a little setback with that freeze. We had a major freeze back in February. So, you know, I kind of did not target them for a while. Kind of gave all the crap to the redfish and kind of went bass fishing and stuff here and there. And, you know, starting to come into the fall transition right now, I'm starting to see a little bit of stuff I like and a little rebound on the fish. I know we have a late spawn right now going on, and, I've saw a lot of good things lately. So, you know, looking up, I'm looking a little optimistic. You know, I did catch some fish after the freeze, but they were kind of strewn about in places you wouldn't normally catch them. It's kind of weird for a couple months there, but been starting to put some stuff together the past few weeks, and I'm excited about that. But enough about that right now. We're going to bring our guests on tonight. I'm going to bring Thomas Licht in first. We'll bring him on in and let him introduce himself and tell us a little bit of what's going on, man. Tell all the viewers a little bit about yourself, you know, where you're from, what got you into this fishing thing and into this the plastic boat there.
Well, born and raised in the area where I live now is only a stop, maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes from where I really grew up on the water and got into fishing. My dad was the one that really got me into it. None of my family hunts. We're all fishermen. So he was the one that really instilled it in me. And shoot, man, just recently, the last few years, I've really, really dedicated myself and put myself all in it.
Yeah. Strictly from a kayak?
Well, so the family all had boats. I was brought up on boats. Not too far away from me now, Matthews area. So if you're familiar with the Mob Jack, that's where we did most of our fishing. Mm-hmm. And they were more geared towards trolling for striper. Mm-hmm. live bait for striper and cobia fishing. And that was kind of my bread and butter growing up. And like I said, kind of got out of it. Moved to the city for a little while. Wasn't in the area that when I graduated high school. And decided that city really wasn't for me. It kind of settled back in this area. And it took me until 3 or 4 years ago before I really got back into it, like I said. And I just started out, me and my buddy Michael, who you might follow, Michael McCarger. He's his handle's the Pitmaster Mike. But we had two little plastic, you know, Walmart brand kayaks that we used to go out in, and really got into it, you know, that sit in kayak, shove the tackle box underneath.
Yep.
And kind of, you know, have a rod sticking out. Everything's in the way. Everything's a jumble. But decided that this was the route that we wanted to go, and that's when we got serious about it. So he was the first one to go all in. He got a Hobie PA, and I got a Vibe. I decided that I thought paddle would be my thing. I have a little bit of a knee issue, and I wasn't sure if that was really my mode. So I got into paddling, and that's what I've been doing, man. So I have a Vibe now, Vibe Seaghost 130, but actually in the market for a new one now. That one's about at the end of its road. So I've actually been actively shopping. So yeah, that's next on the to-do list.
There you go. Hey, Vibe, if y'all are guys from Vibe, y'all listening, y'all I want to try to get this guy in a boat. I'm over there crushing him in Virginia. Y'all need somebody up there. How'd you feel about paddling to Jackson? We need some people over that way.
You know, I've been eyeballing Jackson. Really, I have, and I'm not opposed to pedal either. It's it definitely has its advantages because you know I can't move and fish at the same time. So,
yep,
it definitely does. I'm all ears on Jackson, man.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Well, cool deal, man. Well, we're gonna get we'll get into depth on some stuff here coming up, but I want to go ahead and bring our other guest on tonight. We got Miguel Medrano, and we're gonna bring him on right now. Introduce him to everybody. What's going on?
Hey, what's up, dudes? How are y'all doing?
What up? What up?
Doing good. Doing good. And yeah, just tell everybody a little bit about yourself, the area you're from there, and what got you this addiction.
I'm out of Virginia Beach. So okay. What are we, like, 2 hours away from each other, TL?
Yeah, hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah. Went up and fished with TL a couple of times, or once actually. And he came down and fished with us. But I listened in on your intro, and I got an opposite story. My dad, I mean, we didn't go fishing. So when we did go fishing, it was strictly for food, and we did it with a cast net, you know. But my son got me into it. So he's watching YouTube and, you know, some of the bass stuff and some of the saltwater stuff. And he said, I'm like 5 years old. He was like, I want to fish. It's like, all right, cool. So got him a cast net, started there. And he'd catch some fish, look at them in a bucket, and then we'd let him go. And then he wanted to learn how to fish with a fishing rod, hook and line. So I really didn't know anything about it. Not a thing. I mean, it just wasn't I surfed, you know, all growing up. So I was around the water all the time. Just fishing wasn't my thing. So my wife took him out a couple of times first because she grew up on the Intercoastal Waterway in Panama City. And, you know, they had some little bit of luck here and there. And then it was my turn. It was like, all right, I've done it a couple of times. Now it's your turn. You got to take them out. So double drop a rig off of the pier with fish bites. And we roll up on spot and tiny little specks, toss them back. But eventually got into the artificial. He wanted to throw artificial. So he's the one that started this whole thing.
That's cool. And
that's when I got the taste for it. I was like, oh, all right. So I've been fishing about 3.5 years, including the time that I didn't know crap about what I was doing. And, you know, I'm still learning a lot now, obviously, but
learning.
That's how I get into it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the kayak thing came later just to kind of expand your range. And then once that all happened, it's just all down there for down here.
Oh, yeah. We were actually on a pier on a little boat launch, public boat launch, casting. And an old buddy of mine, Jay, you know, Jay Burness, Yakfish 757. I don't think he's active right now, but on IG. But he rolled up on his big rig of a PA with everything you could see. I mean, everything you could want on that thing. And he talked me into getting my first kayak. So I went up to Great Outdoor Provision Company probably a few months later and bought a compass and all she wrote, dude. And that right there, a kayak, if you're learning how to fish or if you're, you know, very proficient at it already.
Yeah.
That'll get you to a whole new level. It'll get you where you need to be and quietly and sneak around, get in the skinny water. Yeah, kayak will always be my thing for sure.
That is such a big, it's an advantage over a boat. You're not blowing them out with your big motor coming in. And I just see it all too much over here, especially with all the flats and you know, stuff we have over here. It's just like they shut down right on top of where you should be fishing. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And it teaches you patience.
Yes,
it definitely teaches you patience, and it makes you observe more. It makes you pick up on things a lot easier.
Yeah, you're. I mean, we do a lot of wade fishing over here that you can get out and wade the reefs and wade all the flats and the, you know, different areas, and we're lucky to have a lot of water like that. We're able to do that. But still, being on that kayak and you're not crunching the shell on the bottom, you're not stirring up all the silt, you know, with the current pushing through all that silt, then fish got to be, you know, like, man, what's going on? There's something going on over there, and they get all skittish or whatever. But all the noise on the reefs when you're walking along and all that doesn't help you sneak up on them big fish. And those big fish didn't get big for not being smart.
Yeah,
they're not dumb. They're not dumb at all, especially trout. Yeah. Not dumb. So, you know, all this started out, you know, I got a similar, you know, story to Thomas, you know, that I, you know, I started fishing at a young age too in coastal Georgia, Southeast Georgia is where I was born and raised there. And I didn't make it over to Texas until 96 after I'd done, you know, been on a world tour or whatever you want to call it in the military and all that mess. But like you, Medell, I grew up surfing. I grew up surfing the ESA. A lot of contests in the Southeast region.
Nice.
Avid skateboarder, BMX rider, freestyler, all that. I was into everything that I had to do with boards and bikes and motorcycles and snowboards. I was all in. Still am. Same. Still kind of dabble. I'll be 50 in December, and I'm trying to stay young, basically. So that's about the only way I can, I guess. You know, working shift work and, you know, sitting, watching a computer screen all night and all that kind of weighs on you, you know, health wise, eating, going to the snack machine and all that. So I've had to really buckle down and get back on track, you know, to stay in decent shape. And I'm glad that I'm been able to do all that, you know, too. But, you know, it does help. I mean, I went into it on an episode with Luke Prentice, who's the guy that had the program I was in on with him, the Kayak Beast fitness deal. And, you know, it makes a difference on the water, being able to reach around and grab stuff and turn around when they were fighting the fish. I mean, just like we were talking before the stuff, and it's like, you know, if rod builders are out there listening, and if you need guys to test blanks for you, put them in the kayak fisherman's hands. We're going to put them rods through so much more mess than anybody else does, just from the angles we have to fight the fish, and we're that close to the water, the angles when we're having to whip them around and follow them around the boat and get when they go underneath and you're going around the bow and just, I mean, put some stress on them rods.
Absolutely.
But you know, I got a little off subject right there, but you know, just being that close to the action, that's the whole deal. You know, we're talking about how we get into that kayak. And that was mine was wanting to expand my range from wade fishing, you know, so I didn't want to buy a boat. You know, I've had all my friends have boats and it's just bust out another 1,000. That's the acronym right there that what it stands for.
There's always something going wrong with them.
Yeah.
But I mean, y'all, you know, obviously when you get into a kayak and then you actually just, you see the stuff that you wouldn't normally see, you know, like you sneak into, you come through like a cut into like a back lake and you're just in there just cruising, and then there's just tails everywhere, and it's like a boat couldn't have fit through that ditch I just went through.
Yeah,
you know, I went through something that was about 2 foot, 3 foot wide, you know, barely got in there with the grass and spiders all over you. and you know, there's just no way to, you know, a boat could have got in there and seen that, you know, and you get in there and there's freaking tails everywhere. It's freaking amazing. But you know, starting out, you know, y'all got in a kayak, but what kicked off the addiction of chasing these big trout? You know, like I said, and I kind of outlined questions here, and I said, what makes us go so stupid over these mythical beasts? So, TL, let me get your thoughts on that, you know?
Yeah. So, that's a funny story. So, like I mentioned, my buddy Michael, it was his birthday weekend. It was about, I guess it was like 3 years ago now. And my family has a little J14 Carolina skiff. They call it Cool Runnings, like from the movie.
Yeah, yeah, awesome.
It's all decked out reggae. Yeah. So I took him out and we went to this flat that was productive for me and my cousins. Just small red, small trout. And when we went, we were just throwing Bass Assassin, which I hardly touch a soft plastic anymore. It's kind of sad, but we were throwing Bass Assassins on popping corks and we were rattling off it all cookie cutter, 12 inch to 14 inch trout. And just one after another, we probably caught 100 fish easy that afternoon. And there was one fish that he ended up catching. Nothing crazy, 17, 18 inch trout, but it was the biggest one that we had each personally seen at that point. And that kind of just that fish and how it acted and what that fish brought to the table compared to everything else that we had caught that day, it kind of turned us on to like, okay, I need to know more about this. And I need to kind of concentrate more on what exactly this is. And that's kind of where it started. And on Instagram, I'd already followed a couple people, and Facebook, just kind of had my eyes on a couple people. And Charlie Church was the one that really was like, this is the guy. He knows what he's doing. He knows what's up. So I actually reached out to him and was like, what's up with these big trout? And he's probably, a lot of us joke, he's kind of our sensei, so to speak. He's like the godfather of the big trout that really all of us looked up to back then. And the trout community is very hush. I'm sure it is in a lot of areas, but it's almost as a cult following where I am. You don't ask and you don't tell. So he kind of gave me the outliers of that. And, you know, I didn't quite understand it then, but the more that I've done it now, you don't share spots. You don't share your spots. You don't take pictures of your spots. If you really know what, for lack of a proper term or lack of a proper word, what's good for you. So,
yeah.
He kind of saw that I wanted to learn. So, you know, just talking to him, bouncing ideas off of him. And the first one that really turned me on and I said, okay, this is it. This is the fish, was a 26 and a half that I caught, my first citation. So if Charlie explained that to you, 24 inches is a citation, 24 and over. And my first citation was a 26 and a half, and it blew me away. And at that point, I was done. It's like, that's it. And since then, just I've been all in, absolutely all in. I'm all about it.
Sweet. All right, Medill, you answer that one for me too. You know what? Before you do that, though, I know why you fish at night now, so we can't see where you're fishing.
That is a benefit for sure.
That is a benefit of fishing at night for sure, definitely. Or if you can figure out where I'm at by the grass you can see in the background, which is going to be tough to figure out.
I got my first kayak, the Hobie Compass that I mentioned earlier, in I think it was November in 2018. And the first trip I took on it was with a couple of my bros. Jay took me out along with a couple other people. And 2018 was kind of a transition year. There was a freeze the year before. So we were out there catching a ton of small trout, just like you, Thomas. You'd mentioned, 12 to 15 inch trout. I mean, there was an unlimited supply of those. And I thought, wow, this is so much fun. In an hour, I caught more fish than I did in, over a month or two of bass fishing, because that's kind of where we started fishing with artificials, me and my son. And I was like, man, this is insane. I mean, literally, I probably caught 50 fish my second or third time out. I just sat back and was just like, and just watched everybody else catching. I was like, man, this was a blast, but I feel like I need more. Then we started catching a striper and had fun with that as well. But it wasn't until 2019. It was September 2019, and I'd gone through the spring and the summer catching trout and reds and striper and flounder. I wasn't even looking for trout at this point. I mean, people were talking about fang fever and this and that. I was like, what's the big deal? 12, 15 inches. Didn't know they got bigger. And I caught, just out of nowhere, I hooked up on something. I thought it was a striper, because that's what I was catching earlier that day, and pulled the thing up, netted it, brought it in, and just was absolutely floored. I mean, it was a 26 and a quarter inch trout. I didn't even know they got that big, to be quite honest with you, at that moment. That's what hooked me. I was like, there's got to be more of these things out there, and that is what I'm going after. And just like you, TL, I talked to Charlie as well, right around that time. Well, probably a few months after that, because that's when we started fishing in another spot where we were catching a ton of 18 to 23s. And I started talking to Charlie, trying to get, trying to learn, all right, what am I doing? How do I get that 26 again? Mm-hmm. But that was the moment. I was like, as soon as I got that, I mean, it was my first citation ever. And I registered it, because all my guys were like, you got to register that thing. I was like, I don't even know what that means. What do I do?
Give me the details.
Yeah, but it was done. Absolutely done after that.
Yeah, I know y'all, the hush hush of it, like almost like the cult following, like you said, Tom. TL, is that y'all? You want me to call you TL? Tom, Thomas. What do you actually go by?
Either Thomas or TL.
Thomas TL. 10-4 on that.
My dad was Tom, so I haven't quite taken that yet.
All right. Yeah. Right on. But yeah, like the cult following, or the hush hush and don't ask, don't tell. But like, I feel like, in a circle of friends, you will talk, like, mm-hmm. I got a few key people that I'll call and say, hey, they're in different areas and fishing different bases. I'm like, hey, this is what they're doing over here. What are they doing over there? Hey, come up fish with me, and then I'll come down there and fish with you, and kind of see what they're doing and kind of figure them out. And sometimes you'll go out and actually put your two heads together and actually really get on,
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's cool. But I'm not just gonna go blab to anybody about stuff. I mean, you can, like I said, if you can figure out by that little them little patches of grass you can see in the background, more power to you. Yeah. I'm not putting land. I'm not putting landmarks in mine by phone. No.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that hunt and fish the internet. You know what I mean? I don't think that's Tia. It's definitely not me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take a lot more pride and satisfaction into finding my own spots anyway. So anytime we do talk to friends, we're talking, all right, what are the patterns you're seeing?
Yeah, the patterns, yeah.
You know, things of that nature, much more so than spots.
Like, than spots, exactly. You could go give somebody a spot, but, you know, the conditions are going to be different, the tide's going to be different. Yeah, wind direction, barometer, temperature, all that good stuff. Yeah. Bait presence, all that stuff going to play into effect. Water quality, all that good stuff. And you know, and that's the thing. I mean, I get into this all the time on this thing. These YouTube guys that just fish for followers and likes, and they just go and they burn spots. They give away launch points. They give away you know, GPS tracks and all this other stuff. And, and they're charging people a service on this Patreon thing. And they're like, you know, are you really doing them a service by just giving them spots and them GPS marks and everything? No. They need to be learning, you know, more about conditions. And like I said, you know, how the wind direction, how the tide affects it, how the, you know, the water quality, the tidal movement, you know, even if it's wind driven or tidal, you know, there's so much stuff to just process and figure out. And time on the water is going to do that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, and if you're going out there and spending the time, putting the time and effort into it, and you're not paying attention, not learning from it, I mean, you're missing the whole thing.
Yeah,
because it's going to be different every single time you go out there.
Yep.
And you got to try different things until you key in on exactly how they want to see it.
And that's right. We're going right into what I was kind of wanted to go over next, which is talk about the learning curves, you know, and just things you have figured out by time on the water. To aid in staying on fish and kind of dissecting everything. So, I mean, that's right. We're the direction we're going was what we were talking about right there is that, you know, your head's got to be on a swivel, you know, and they're doing different things all the time.
But they're always eating.
they're eating. They're eating a lot. Especially that one. Good God Almighty! I don't know. She had eggs though too. They're on their last spawn of the year over here. And as I had kept a couple smaller ones the week before. Had a couple of ones that were hooked a little too deep. You know, they weren't going to make it. I tried and they didn't make it, so I had to take a few home. Unfortunately, I think I've only kept two trout all year. You know, but they had some roe in them, and they were you know, getting ready for this last spawn of the year here. It looks like we're going to have hopefully a pretty good fall on into the winter. I'm liking what I'm seeing.
Yeah, things are looking up down there
for sure. Tia, what you got on the learning curve there? You know, I know you agree to time on the water. I know that how you feel about that too.
Yeah, time on the water. So it's going to be a little difficult for me. I was thinking about this earlier today and really trying to pinpoint things that I see. But really, so my attack every day for the most part, unless I really know an area and know where I'm going, is typically search and destroy. If I can help it, I'm going deep to shallow and pretty much just with a fine tooth and comb, really trying to figure out what's going on. But in areas that I know, that's really just going to be picking up on bait activity and wind and tide. And it's still something that I'm learning every trip that I go out. Like just recently, I went on a trip that the tide and the wind was going the same direction. Bait was moving off of a flat and the fish were staged up and a little swallow as the bait was going overhead. They were just tucked in this at no more than six inches to a foot depth change that they were all clinging to. The wind direction switched 180. Tide wind was going against itself, and that bait had either pushed directly up against the bank or went deep, and that's where the fish were. So it's just picking up on those minute things. And like I said, I'm still learning. I'm still not the best at knowing when I get to a flat, this is what I need to do. But hopefully I can pick up on what I need to do quickly once I get there.
And that's like we said, head on a swivel, paying attention. Yeah.
Exactly. Just knowing what to look for, and or being patient enough to know that I just need to wait it out until this is supposed to happen.
Till they turn on. Yeah. There's times you'll see it and you'll say, man, the bait in the area is here. The fish are here. They're just not eating right now. I said, something's going to change and they're going to click. And you know, they're opportunistic feeders. I mean, you hear that on basically every podcast that you ever would listen to about speckled trout and just the way, you know, the ferocious, I mean, they gorge when they turn on, and they're going to sit and ambush stuff and they're going to kill it. And I find a lot of those bigger fish pile up in wolf packs. You know, a lot of times if you catch one, there's going to be a couple more roaming right there. You know, we get some single bigger fish that might hang on the back end of redfish schools at times. And I've picked some good ones off of the backside of schools of redfish on the flats. But a lot of times it's a wolf pack of fish, you know, 3, 4, 5 of them just rotting everything inside when you get on them like that sometimes. Them things are just a different animal. Some of the stuff they do, man, it's just like we were talking beforehand about, you know, how the bigger ones they'll just run straight at you, you know. They have no regards for kayaks or you or anything else or tackle. I mean, I've got an 8-1-to-1 and you're reeling as fast as you can trying to keep up with it, and it still burns right by you. And gill flares, shaking violently, and just flicks your, you know, paddle tail, jig head, topwater, corky, double D, flicks it right out, you know. They definitely an animal. Beast. Cool deal, man. Hey, being on the East Coast over there, and y'all are on the upper range of the fish, you know, y'all have a little more temperature swing over there in the winter, a little colder climate. And being conservation minded, you know, with Dave Flatt and, you know, the Release Over 20 initiative, and he did all that, and everybody's kind of, the East Coast is definitely taking a hold of that a lot better than over here in Texas. You can see that in the numbers. I don't know if it's just not knowing about it or just not wanting to be involved in it or something. I don't have the answer for that, but what are y'all's thoughts on that over there? Conservation wise, do y'all see it helping so far?
I think a lot of people really taken hold of it. I mean, these are the guys that are out there really looking for speckled trout, you know? Yeah. And they want to conserve the fishery as much as TL and I do and the rest of the crew. But I don't know. I think it was, to be quite honest with you, I think it became a cool thing to do. And then they learned more about why they should continue doing it. Mm-hmm. We promote the heck out of this thing. I put them on billboards in our area, and they're still up. I mean, they've been up this entire time. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Anytime you drive through, you can still see them up. They had a press creative soon, but people have really taken hold of it in this area. And you'll see some people on there, you know, promoting their fish that they release, and you're like, man, that dude would not have done that, you know, a few months ago. Right, T.L.?
Yeah. Yep. I was going to say the same thing. Yep.
There's no way, but you know, whatever it takes, you know, to help the cause for sure. I believe in it. I am not, you know, I'm not persecuting anyone that keeps them. Of course not. It's the legal right to. I just like the ones I like to be selective, you know, for people to be selective on what they do take to help.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I can see, you know, the data and stuff that Dave collects and what he does and for that program is just awesome. And that's why I was like, shoot, yeah, man. I said, this is awesome. I said, I'm down with this because I'm, you know, I love to chase them this time of year. I said, you can pretty much count me out of anything from now until March. I'm chasing big trout. I'm chasing trout, trying to chase big trout.
Yeah. That first citation I got, 26 and a quarter. I mean, I literally looked at this thing and I was a keeper at that point. I was like, there's no way I can keep this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, yep. It got this big. I'm gonna let it keep getting bigger.
Yeah, for sure. They're just like I said. They're mythical beasts. Yeah, them things just, oh man.
I don't know, man. I can't it even hardly bring myself to bring meat home anymore. It's just after the appreciation that I've gotten just over, like, yeah, the chase and finally like striving for that mark and hitting that mark, it makes it so much more difficult for me to feel okay like bleeding out a fish and throwing it in the cooler. I rarely bring fish home anymore. You know, if like, let's say the girlfriend's dad wants fish, like I'll go out of my way and try and make something happen, but I'm bringing home a red if I can help it.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it, shoot, I've probably made 3 trips this year just to bring something home to the table. Besides that, man, I appreciate the fishery too much. I just can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to go out and catch fish, it's either going to be, I'm going to go run down to School of Reds and pull a couple out, or I'm going to go soak some fish bites and get to some black drum. You know, there's plenty of them around too still. So, you know, I'm go catch a couple of drum, bring them home, pan fry them, do whatever, blacken them, put them on the half shell, fish tacos, whatever. We like fish. So if my wife or, you know, in-laws, you know, hey, you know, bring some fish, you know, I'll take a few home. But you know, like this year after the freeze, I've really been really reluctant to do that. You know, the only times I've brought fish home was when they were just not going to make it, you know.
Yeah,
that's the only time. I normally don't even have a stringer or anything. And then our redfish events over here are live weigh-ins usually. So we have a live well that we put on the kayaks with recirculation and oxygen. So yeah, we keep the fish alive, you know, and they're released after the events. And you know, the trout events we fished earlier in the year before the freeze, you know, it was the same thing. It was a live weigh-in and we fished, you know, 4 of us on kayaks against, you know, boat teams and everything, which is pretty cool. That was a pretty good one. You know, before the freeze, I want to say in January, leading up before the freeze, there was just some days that were just downright amazing, fish wise. And to go from that to seeing how it was after the freeze, you know, it definitely made you, you know, be like, there's no way I can honestly keep trout at all this year, you know. So I appreciate the fish way too much because growing up as a young kid, you know, fishing that East Coast and 7-foot tide swings over there in Georgia, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine that.
Just crazy tide swings and slip floats with big pin number 9s and 109s, and you're throwing with like 50-pound Dicron. You got to put line dressing on the line so it floats and then get caught on the reefs. And I was like, I'm not doing this. And I was like hard-headed with a lightning rod and a little Daiwa Mag Force or a Bantam 10SG. And I'd go out there with stingray grubs and start catching them on artificials. And I'd make my uncle and all them mad. And he'd be like, Dustin, you catching fish on them artificials? They ain't little bass fishermen. because I just got tired of throwing in big old dang freaking corks, man. I was like, I got to do something else. And then I started taking crankbaits out there in top waters and figuring it out, you know, on the artificials as a young kid, which was cool. So, and that's what I was wanting to kind of get into is that, you know, the off the wall tactics and stuff that you can entice those fish with is, you know, there's a lot of people that are finally, oh, my earphones just came undone. A lot of people that can see the benefits of those big swim baits and glide baits.
Yeah, I've been wanting to mess with those.
It's really cool to see them, especially if the water's clear, you can actually see them following and stalking that glide bait. I've had a couple takes that are just like, you're like, man, is that fish going to eat it? Is that, bam, just out of nowhere. It just crushes it. And, you know, same thing with jerk baits and big flukes and even big, like, ribbon tail worms, believe it or not. Like stupid stuff you never think, oh, I'm not gonna catch trout on that damn thing. They will eat it. They will eat it up. y'all got in anything like that off the wall stuff or
You know what? I'm a Marylord 27 guy through and through. I mean, that's pretty much, I may as well tie it on. I use clips on mine, but I mean,
I might as well just have one on every rod, huh?
Yeah. And TL got me into the double Ds recently, and I can't believe I didn't know about them. You know, I was like, man, these things float up. There's no way they float up. They look exactly like the 27s, and they are. They're pretty damn identical.
Yes, yeah, they're almost the same.
Structurally, that's missing. Got to be for it to be floating up the way it does. But Charlie got me into what turned me on and really got me going. Charlie said, look, I was casting in 10, 12 foot of water for these things. You know, that's where I got my first citation, was out of 12 feet of water. And he said, you should give the shallows a try. And after that, it was lights off. You know, I mean, it was, that was it. Figured that out, and I used to put lead tape on the 27s because, oh, man, they're not sinking far enough, quick enough for me. It's way too slow. And now I was like, man, these 27s sink too fast now.
Yeah.
I'm in 1 to 3 feet of water, casting right into 1 to 2, 3 feet of water over oysters. And
that's what that DD excels in, that situation. Perfect. Right there. Perfect. Yeah. And a soft dine. The soft dine excels too. You know, the soft dines.
I like to move it fast anyway, so it wasn't that big a deal. But if the bite is a little tentative, I'll move it a little slower, real little slower, and it would get hung up in these oysters. But that double D made a huge difference. That was a game changer for me for sure. What else weirdo I've been into? I've been messing with specifically for trout. I was a hard bait guy through and through. When I first started, of course, I was throwing the eye strike with little 3-inch, 3.5-inch minnows, and that was my thing. But recently I've been messing with heavier eye strike jig heads. I brought one out here. This is a striper eye. It's a 1/2-ounce striper eye with a 5-inch minnows, diesel minnows. And man, I've been getting some hard smacks on this thing and lost a huge trout. Probably my PB to date, you know, had I landed it. But I've been messing around with bigger profile soft plastics. This thing right here, 7-inch jerk shads.
Yep.
Oh yeah. The Texas XL.
On the Texas XL. Yep. Texas
XL. It's been amazing. I haven't got any good trout on it yet, but you know, striper and the reds are eating it up.
Yeah, that thing just darts all over erratically, and it usually crush that thing too.
That's 1/2-ounce, and I'm moving it. I'm just moving it real fast over oysters, and I'm probably working like 2 to 4 feet of water instead of 1 to 3.
Yeah,
but yeah, I've been getting some slams on it. I just haven't been able to convert the trout on those things.
So you haven't been you haven't gotten the corky addiction yet?
I got a citation on a corky in the spring, but I don't know. It's just so easy just to good old faithful. This is
yeah.
That's my jam right there.
Yeah.
Always. This is always down every single time.
Yeah. I know TL's got some. Probably got Steve on speed dial.
Oh, yeah. No, I usually talk to Steve at least once every couple weeks. I recently talked to him, and he's like, "I've been wondering where you were because I hadn't talked to him since last, I guess, winter when I put a big order in." But yeah, he's fun. He's a lot of fun talk to. I started out with soft plastics, you know, the Bass Assassin paddle tails, and then Trout Trick. I messed with the Trout Trick for quite a while, and mostly that was on the popping cork when I first started. But when I really started pursuing trout, I was a 17. I was just a Mirrodin guy, hardcore. And talking to Charlie, he's like, you really should try the 27. You really need to try the 27. So I started the XL, and that's probably today I'm always going to have that 27 MR tied on. Either that or a topwater if I can get away with throwing a topwater. Because it's bittersweet. So I've had more big trout eat a topwater than any other lure that I have, but I've had more misses on a topwater than any lure that I have. So that's kind of where that double D has come into play. And I'm the same way as Medell. Right now, this time of year, I'm burning that thing if I can. And if they're responding, that's how I'm throwing it. Yeah. I'm burning it back and throwing in twitches as fast as I can. And then from there, kind of negate, all right, I need to throw it slower, or this is how they're, you know, they're eating it. Or just the other day, they were nipping at it as I was burning it back. But man, if I was pausing it, they were choking it.
Yeah.
And yeah, just now, just the last, so I think who shared it? I think it was on Instagram. Someone shared the picture of the that 808 fat boy that I had thrown. That was the first fish that I had actually tried to catch, you know, tried to get a trout on a fat boy. And I'm just starting to kind of mix those in again now because we do still have bluefish.
Oh yeah.
So
that's, tear them up.
Yeah, once we get into it's a little bit colder, once we start getting into late October and November, I'll start dedicating a lot more time with those. But that's pretty much the mix right there. So right now I'm throwing 27s, double D's, top waters, and a corky. If I'm on a bite, I'll throw a corky.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm waiting for that water to cool down just a little more, go to the corky. They're still, kind of starting to transition. They'll be after the spawn, they'll really be starting to get a couple more good fronts under our belt, and they'll start doing their little fall thing a little better. But yeah, top water, ride or die right now.
Yeah.
And then an 1/8 ounce jig head with a, you know, kickback shad on there, four and a half inch paddle tail, just burning it a lot. But mainly one knocker spooks, man.
Yeah.
Got some custom stuff from Coastal Marsh and Salty Plugger. Got some stuff like that, and do a lot of work with those. Just real erratic retrieve sometimes, and then sometimes, you know, sometimes they want, you know, twitch, 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 pause, twitch, twitch, pause. You know, they'll start nipping at it, flick, 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 and they'll knock it out of the water acting stupid, and then that's when I'll put that double D on and the XL and just burn it and pause it, and they'll usually just like, bam, rip the rod out your hand. Yeah. You know, good stuff. Wake baits at times over shell, you know, if there's some shell stuff. Yeah, real good. The redfish will just absolutely annihilate them. They can't stand those things. But I've had some good luck in the marshy areas with some drains and stuff with some trout around that. They come on up and eat that too pretty good.
I think you were the one that recommended the Sixth Sense wake bait.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grabbed a few of those for reds over the summertime while I was kind of our red bite's been awesome this year. So I was playing with those for a while, but yeah, I need to pull a couple of those out and give it a shot when I'm fishing for trout.
Yeah. The, especially those bigger profile, the speed wake, there's actually a jointed one, a segmented one, a 6-cent speed wake, that looks really great in the water. And, I've had a couple good fish on it so far this year. It makes them mad. You get more of a reaction strike from that rattle and that swagger. Those things have. So yeah, it's definitely good bait. I really like those. What is it? The Rapala, the Skitterwalk V's, the big ones.
Oh yeah,
they get a good look.
The 13.
I got the black and gold with the orange on the throat. Oh my goodness, I've crushed some on that. I need to put new hooks on it. It's about wore out. This gets all scratched.
Do you think
up.
They even care about the color? Because I'm just throwing no matter what color they are.
At times, different times of year. I mean, you don't know if they're colorblind or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can get in depth with it and this and that, and the way they see red, the way they see pink or something. But,
yeah.
You know, I know for damn sure there's not no damn pink croaker swimming around.
Out there. No.
But they sure as hell on certain days want that bubblegum pink corky.
Mm-hmm.
And they will absolutely crush it. Or that chartreuse one, depending on the water clarity and all this and that. But, you know, I don't know. But it's just, they're weird sometimes. They're just finicky, you know. They them high pressure days, they might want that clear white with silver flake, you know, or they might want that little bitty that peanut, you know. Don't sleep on that thing. Don't sleep on that thing.
I know. I heard.
Don't sleep on it. That thing will absolutely crush some big fish on them high pressure days or them pressured fish. I've caught some good ones on the peanut. Yeah.
And another lure I need to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another I fish it mostly nights, you know, so I throw whatever color I have on the top water at night, and if they're there and they're feeding on top, they're smacking it.
They're smacking it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the other, I fished the morning before my day shift the other day and had a couple decent trout and then I was throwing whatever I put on. I caught a lot of smaller fish, you know, like 14, 15 inch trout. They were just popping a fool out of it.
Yeah.
And it was it's actually called a trout spank. It's like a blue moon, but with chartreuse and the kind of blue moon colors. It's pretty good looking bait. They were killing that thing. And you're like, man, that's at night too. And it's just like, can they really see? And them fish can see, they can feel the vibration. They can just feel it. Everything. Yep. Yep. And then if they're going to commit to something, they're going to come and get it for sure. So Dirty 30. Anybody got there yet?
Nah. Trying.
Not me either. All these years over here. And I was, still ain't made 29.75.
Good for you for getting that far.
I've had a lot of fish at 27.5.
In spring, it was like all you can catch 24 to 25s. And every once in a while, I'd get a 26 and a quarter. And finally broke, that was my PB from the very beginning, 26 and a quarter, finally broke that.
You just got one in September, correct?
Seven, yeah.
Did you take the trout pool for September?
No.
Did you have the big fish? Somebody?
No. Oh, man. Yeah, so in the trout pool, we don't pinch the tail. So left it sitting there, and it was, I mean, literally, I don't know, a 30-second off of the line. So we, you know, I submitted it for a 26 and three quarters.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she was 27.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Sweep that tail a little bit. She's 27 all day.
It wasn't even much. I just didn't want my hands on it. You know?
Right.
But yeah, I did not take it for sure.
And that's how I try to take my pictures. I'll get them set up on the board and I'll just lay the tail down and let it lay and get her on there and look. Okay, there she is. I don't stuff them and sweep them and all that stuff. I like just lay her and get her on there and get her back. That's probably the best thing to do anyways. The less you handle them, the better they are.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I was in a rush to take her back in the water.
Yeah.
Not that she fought very long. I scooped her up and I keep her in the net in the water. So I've got a real deep net.
Yeah.
And I put one leg over it and she stays in the net while I'm at, and then I'll pull her out, measure, put her back in, then pull her out and take the picture.
Take a quick photo. Yep. Yeah. And get her gone. Yeah. You always get some nighttime shots.
Yeah.
What are you using for? Do you have a light set up or is that the flag?
I got two lights. So there's two one lights mounted on the camera rig, which is my cell phone rig.
Yeah.
And then another one over here to kind of blast the shadows off me. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It took a while to figure out.
That's
art and science to it.
That's one thing I got to figure out. I got the daytime stuff with a clampable GoPro and the angle. It's all about the angles. Everybody has that little grip and kind of hold, and I mean, I want to try to get like the water level shots and all that. Like go look at fly fish, some of the like serious fly fishermen, go look at some of their photos and look at how the stuff they're doing. And I said, that's what I'm copying right there. I'm getting that shot right there.
I say it every time. And then you're in it and you're like, oh, let me just go and get another one. It's like, I'm rushing to get it back in the water and catch more.
Especially like for a lot of that stuff, I'll just shoot video, GoPro, start recording, and then I'll just screen grab some stuff, especially just for social media. But if I'm going to do one for an article, or like in a print or something, I'm actually going to take the time. And a lot of times if it's a bigger trout, if I get a good shot, I get a good shot. Great. But a lot of times it's redfish. I'm going to hold, they're a little hardier, especially, in the summer, they're both, but a trout's a lot more delicate, mm-hmm. Definitely get them back in.
I can't use a GoPro at night though.
No,
I can't get a good shot out on them, so I quit using it.
Yeah, it's definitely tough to get a good shot on the. It gets fuzzy, glares, noise. You get glare. You get a lot of noise. Noise.
Wash out real quick on those things.
So as far as the fishery there in Virginia, I mean it's awesome from the stats I see from the Release Over 20 program and everything, and. The stuff me and Charlie talked about, I was like, man, y'all do have some freezes that affect stuff here and there, but it looks like it bounces back pretty good.
Seems like it.
Yeah. I was a little nervous there for a while. Coming out of spring and into summer, I was definitely getting a little nervous, but I don't know if it's a product of just me over the last year. And picking up on more, definitely gaining confidence, or it's just that it bounced back that well that it seems healthy this fall when our freeze definitely, especially up here where we were, two of the rivers that I fish in the wintertime, man, it was sad paddling the rivers and just lined with fish. And I had a buddy, Keith, old head, been doing it forever, has some dirty 30s in his repertoire. He's been fishing for trout, since the 70s. But he actually scooped up some 28s, 29s, 30s that were dead over the wintertime. Mm. We were real nervous how it was going to look. And I still think someone's going to nab a 30 in the pool this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's what's going to win it.
30 plus. Yep.
What's in the lead right now?
27 3/4
almost. Yeah. 3/4. Yep. I think just caught last week.
Dang.
Yeah.
Still a good fish though.
No, the freeze scared me too, dude. February I quit fishing for him. I caught two citations in January, Like, I had this whole goal set out. I was like, I'm going to catch at least one every single month. I was going to chase them up to where you are, TL, and then sweep back down. But February kind of threw my whole game off. I was like, man, I can't do it. You know, I can't go fish for them right now.
Yeah. No, Mike and I both switched gears. We went all out on the striper. So, I mean, that was fun in part, though. I mean, that was definitely fun. I got my first striper over 45 inches.
Ooh,
yeah. And that was in the kayak. So that was awesome. So I think this year when it's time, we're both going to push really hard to get that 50 because I think we can do it.
Nice.
Man, that's going to be insane.
That's what I'm missing right now. My three targeted species, striper, well, trout first, and then striper and reds for sure. Mm-hmm. And I haven't gotten a striper citation yet. I'll get one.
That's 45 inches plus? And
40, is it 45, right? Yep.
Yeah, 45, 46, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. That's a beast on a kayak.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, it was unreal. And I caught it in, like, where I got it, close to deep water. But I caught this fish in – so the day before, my whole goal was to break 30 inches. And the day before I got a 32, it was the first 30-inch rockfish that I got from a kayak. And I went back the very next day and fished the area and caught that fish in less than 3 feet of water, and it came up head shaking. 45-inch rockfish head shaking like a trout. I was blown away, and I really didn't know that was possible where I was, that class of fish was in there. And then that's when, after I posted it, a couple people that knew the striper fishery were like, so you stumbled on something that happens, and if you catch another one, you need to keep it to yourself. So
yeah.
That was on dumb luck. But yeah, we're real excited for it this year.
Yeah.
Real excited for it.
Nice, straight up. Big old fish.
I got a 42 in spring. And yeah. I was like, man, I need that 44, you know, 45. It is 44. And just couldn't find it.
Yeah,
I was looking for bull reds. Yeah.
Yeah, I was me in Gulf Shores last year, you know, fishing for a slot fish in the tournament, and I think I caught, what was it, 6 fish over 30 inches in one day. And the biggest one was, I don't know how big it was, but it was easily a foot over my board, which was 32 inches long, and I caught it on a 1.5 series square bill on a Waterloo HP Slam mag with 20 pound braid and 20 pound fluoro leader. Jeez. Like a 45 inch redfish on a crankbait.
That's what and the that striper that I got was on a trout medium heavy trout rod, so it's like what I typically throw like a catch five or a topwater on.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it? Redfish eye and a 5-inch Z-man on it. I think it was 30-pound fluoro. So yeah, definitely targeting a smaller class of fish.
But yeah, for that sure. Was cool. Man, all right. Well, I'm gonna throw something out there. We kind of dabbled on some baits and stuff earlier, but I usually like to throw a jab out there and do a thing called pick three. And what we're gonna do is Medill, I'll let you go first. Three setups, spin cast, bait cast, whatever. Let us know what it is and then what you got tied on. Or is it all going to be 27s on all three rods?
Nah.
I'm messing with
you. Just now. Man, trout.
Yeah, for big trout.
Medium light, 7-foot, DC sticks. This is pretty much what comes out with me all the time with a little – 2,500, 3,000 ballistic.
Yeah.
20-pound test braid and 20-pound fluoro. And that'll throw this and this. This is the double D I throw now. Yep. Thanks, TL. And so I'll have two setups just like that. And then for top water, I throw the either one of these, whichever they want, the 10, the V10, Rapala V10, the V13, and I'll use a medium moderate.
Yeah.
Gives it a little bit, you know, more flex in the backbone. Mm-hmm. It's easier for me to work, but same kind of deal, ballistic on that, and 7 foot, medium moderate rod, same braid, same for it. That's it. That's my three.
Sweet.
Well, yeah. I always have a fourth one too. But
you got a fourth one too?
Yeah.
All good.
That's my soft plastic for reds and striper.
There you go.
All right. So, spinning for sure. Spinning. I just got a bait caster, but raised on spinning, always done spinning. So the bait caster is an interesting learning curve. but I think I'm going to dedicate Corky's to that this year. So we'll see how that goes. But so 7 foot to 7'3", medium moderate is what I'm throwing 9 out of 10 times. 2,500 to 3,000. Right now I'm rocking a 2,500 Certate. That was just kind of a gift for myself, and I'm in love with that reel right now. That thing is unreal. 20-pound braid. Fluoro can change. I'm rocking 20 right now, wintertime. Sometimes I'll go down a little bit, and I'll go up to 30. 30 is more for the bigger baits, just because I've had too many issues with throwing off, with having leader break and throwing off lure. So that's kind of more of a reassurance thing than anything. 20 pound is usually what I'm throwing. And yeah, I'd usually start with a 27 and then we'll go double D if I need to. And top water, head and one knocker all the way.
That's my favorite bait, bone and silver.
Yeah, I'm throwing a bone right now. It's always tied on.
Yep. There's a different one you can find. Some of them are just bone, but then there's a bone one that you can find that has an orange. Somebody's out.
Yeah,
that one with that orange throat you can find. And I don't know
what. I got one of those. The bone with the orange throat.
The orange throat. Yep. Yep. I like that one. And I like the chartreuse and silver, pink and gold, and then the bone and silver holographic one is the money.
I had one of those for a while and I lost it. That chrome sided one, like the skeleton pattern on the side.
Yep. That's the one that's pretty much always tied on my rock, my HP Slam Mag 7-0 20 pound braid straight to a twitch fish clip. Yep. Let's pop it out quick if I have to. I got some other stuff I'd like to throw that 6-inch Mag Dog. It's a bigger profile top water, and then that Speed Wake I'll put on there. Jerk baits. I don't know if y'all follow Jeff Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sleep on his stuff. The croaker ones, his baby trout ones. He's got the 110 baby trout. I got a few of them in the mail, and I'm looking forward to putting those to use here in the next couple weeks. You know, the big swim baits, the line through swim baits with the treble hook, just slow rolling them over shell works real good lately for me. But a lot of my plastics in the winter, I've been going to, 16th ounce jig heads, especially when we have our warmer days, and they'll come up on the tide will fill in over the shell, and they'll come up in, 2-3 foot of water, and the water, there's a slight, 2 to 3 different temperature change from that sun warming that reef, and that water fills in over that reef, and that they kind of move up and feed. Throwing that light jig head on just straight fluorocarbon, and some of the bigger fish I've caught on fluoro, I've landed and not had as many fish throw the bait because you get a little more stretch, and it absorbs those head shakes a little better than that braid to a 15-inch, 20-inch leader. I've noticed some of that going to straight fluorocarbon, which is like, that's what we use bass fishing a lot, unless you're punching a super heavy cover, we're throwing straight braid. But even fishing in like hydrilla and stuff and burning chatterbaits through, You know, I use 14 and 17 pound fluoro doing that. And that's what I kind of transitioned to some on my Waterloo 6.9 HP light with the Coastal SVTWs with the straight fluoro with a light jig head, smaller jig head too. Smaller hook with a bigger swim bait. For some reason, they hold on to that bait and get it. And I've had a lot less shake off doing that on my soft plastics lately. I've been fishing straight fluoro. Just something different. The sensitivity is a little better with that braid for those light bites in the winter. But, you know, normally when one of those big ones grabs a hold of it, you know.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You know for sure. You know, we got some really cool areas around where I'm at. We got some rivers they move up into the deeper drop-offs and channels. They use a lot of side scan and all that kind of stuff. And then we got some deeper reefs and stuff in some industrial areas that are pretty cool stuff. So, I mean, there's just – it's vast. And I can imagine that's what it's like over there, you know, where y'all are fishing, the Chesapeake and the watershed around there and everything too. I want to make it over there. I'm gonna put it on my calendar for next year.
Let us know.
Next year, in the fall, I'm on a road trip over there. I got a buddy that lives in VB. He's in the Navy.
You got a place to stay.
Got a place to stay. Come over here and see my buddy Brant, buddy I went to high school with. He went into the military a year after I went in, and he's still in. He's been in the Navy. I think this is 31st or 32nd year.
Yeah.
He moved up to the enlisted ranks, and he's a CWO5 now, which is, I don't think there's many of them, but yeah.
Well, when you come
good
up,
dude over there, I need to come over there and hit some of the parks and skate.
I
think I'd rather just bring my kayak and try to get me a citation when I'm over there.
Dave is going to come up sooner or later. He's been talking about wanting to come up and kayak fish specifically, and very specifically at night.
Well, we might need to collaborate with him on that, and we just need to make a trip out of it, and I'll, you know, get up there. Looks like the fall would probably be the best time, you know.
It would be
next year. That might be a good thing. This year is kind of whacked out. There's no way I could get over there this year.
Yeah,
I'd have to schedule it.
I'm in my busy season right now.
Schedule it and get ready.
Yeah,
and, you know, everything's. The way everything is right now, everything's kind of crazy, manufacturing wise, reels, baits, a lot of stuff is just crazy right now too. We'll see how everything settles out. But yeah, man, I appreciate y'all coming on, man. It's been we're over an hour already. Just talking about what we love, you know. I mean, yeah. I'm sure we could go another hour. might have to continue this at a later date. But yeah, getting into the end of the show here, we'll try and wrap things up, and I want to give y'all opportunity to take the mic and thank everybody, or thank anybody you'd like to, or give some shout outs and stuff. So TL, go ahead and it's yours, bud.
Yeah, dude. So really it's just the people that really instilled this in me and kind of cheer me on. I think I already said for the most part, Mike first and foremost, just because he's just as into it as I am. So he's the only person that really has 100% transparency as far as what's going out on the water and what I'm seeing, because we started this and we're going to finish it together. And then yeah, Charlie and Keith for kind of being that guy for me and kind of showing me the way and really taking me under their wings. And shoot, I mean, there's so many people to thank. All the guys in 757, really, dude. Madel, Dan, Jay, Kyle. Yeah, I mean, I really don't want to get too far in it because I know I'm going to forget some people. But
yeah,
dude, the Instagram and the – just this chase and the people that we've met, it's been really cool. It's been really cool.
Word. Right on.
Yeah, my first thank you definitely goes to my son and my wife for letting me do this. I mean, you know, typical Friday night, you know, I get home from being awake since 5 o'clock in the morning, have dinner with them and head out and don't get back till 8 o'clock in the morning and then fix breakfast. Dude, I go 35 hours, zero sleep. So I appreciate them.
That's called dedication right there.
Yeah.
Dude, it's
yeah.
an addiction. It's yeah, a very it healthy one, but yeah. it's an addiction nonetheless. And same, my fishing partner is Dan, and Fish DC Sticks. He also sponsors me for the rods. He builds the custom rods for me. But he's the dude I fish with the most. Full transparency, just like you and Mike.
Yeah.
On what we do, I mean, we fish together a lot more than people think. The crew over at Great Outdoor Provision Company for, you know, having me on their team, and Hobie for having me on theirs as well, and Salty Crew and iStrike, of course. But yeah, everybody's support and 757. I mean, what's one big family here? We don't completely share all of our spots, you know, but we definitely talk and share patterns and things like that. But
yeah. Definitely share a passion, and we get hyped. We definitely get hyped for one another.
Yeah, for sure.
That's how there's a core group of us that are, you know, that really like tune in to the bigger fish during the winter. That's what we like to do: chase these things and the myth, the legends, the mythical beasts. So yep. You say it. But yeah, we're the same. We hype each other up, you know, we're always building each other up too. When we get a big fish and sharing and, you know, just all that good stuff, you know, that comes with it. Like you said, passion, obsession,
yeah.
It's all of those, you know, it's all of those chasing these fish, these beautiful creatures they are, you know, and, you know, I'd like to give a shout out to, you know, to Chris Bush with Speckled Truth.
Oh yeah,
you know what he's done with everything too, and you know, getting all the old legends on and all that. You know, I'm nowhere near any of the level of some of them guys he's had on there, and I'm just in awe when I get to listen to you know, his guests and everything. So, you know, big shout out to him. Big shout out to Dave Flad for the Release Over 20 initiative. You know, we're building it over here. I'm all in. So, you know. Stoked on that, and stoked for you guys coming on here, coming on Chasing the Tide and talking some trout with me. You know, it's good to get like-minded anglers on the show that have the passion the same way I do, same way I feel about these speckled trout. And
yeah, dude. Well, I appreciate stuff, the man. Nod.
Yeah,
I definitely appreciate the nod. It's humbling to know that people are looking like that. So this is awesome. I appreciate.
Oh yeah, we watching.
Yeah,
we watching. We watching. It's you know, the camaraderie, you know, in kayak fishing, and even in, you know, just like, you know, there is, well, they, you know, taboo and stuff to, but you know, that camaraderie is shared. So it's all good, man.
Yeah,
sure. I appreciate what y'all are doing. That's why I want to reach out with y'all and have y'all on the show. You know, thank y'all for coming on. Thanks to all the listeners, everybody watching, listening in to the podcast here. And, you know, thanks to Waterloo Rods and True Store & Co. for being supporters of this podcast. And, you know, Pal and Finn for letting me be part of the family and be part of that whole network. We got all kinds of different shows. Just like, there's not just this saltwater one. There's Bass Fish for Noobs. There's the Outdoor Show, you know, Adventures with Outdoor Woman. There's a Reel Down. There's the Final Cast Gear Reviews and Tournament Updates and River Bassing. I mean, Hunting. You know, you name it, we got it. We're like a big conglomerate of podcasts. It's pretty insane.
Yeah. That's
so funny. Yeah, but thanks to all the listeners. Thanks to the support from everybody out there. And we'll see y'all next time on Chasing the Tide. Out. You.
Oh,